Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Nick Lowry is our very special guest, one of the great kickers in NFL history, and one of the smartest guys who's ever played the game. Ivy Leaguer, I think Dartmouth.
Come now.
Flattery will get me nowhere, but I'm not flattering you. It really, one of the brightest guys to ever play, and who better to talk about the state, especially some serious issues that the NFL are dealing with than Nick Lowry. Nick, welcome.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listen, I'm thrilled to have you, and unfortunately, whenever you bring up the NFL, people are going to be not just talking about the game or the positions or how the game has changed, but we're talking about serious problems. CTE is an issue, and the problems with the concussions that have gone on, and I'm sure that you have lost good friends and saw good friends, seen good friends really lose a lot of their faculties due to playing football. What's your take on the modern dialogue that's going on?
Well, I would make the interesting observation that, how does it not change your behavior when you see people that you really love and admire, like Mike Webster and Junior Seau, and frankly, Dwight Clark and Dave Duerson, who was the only one in the movie Concussion I felt was not was given somewhat of a disservice. And, Junior Seau, one of the most spirited, pure warriors of the game ever. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, this is the best thing. Football and the NFL is the best thing that ever happened to me. I mean, I didn't go through being cut by 8 teams 11 times to not love the game and then to learn how to perform at that highest level. That's a gift. That is a gift that everybody craves in life. And to do it and to manifest it on the biggest stage, especially as a kicker, because it's just down to literally inches and tenths of a second. You either get it done or you don't. So, I want to definitely say I'm here to preserve the game. I had a conversation with Bob Castellini, the owner of the Cincinnati Reds, a few years ago, and he said, as the owner, I feel I'm a steward of the game. That's what I'm here to do, is protect and nurture the game. And that's, to me, what all of us have to do, is protect the best game in America, the game that does teach great lessons. But at the same time, we got to do something about to make sure that we preserve it the right way by learning the lessons and seeing how people have endured the impact, if you will, of lots of hits. And the good news is there's lots of good science now that shows that we can help literally protect the most vulnerable cells in the body, which are the neurons in the brain. The Salk Institute and Dr. David Schubert have come out with some great studies that show there's even neurogenesis, and that CBDs, and not marijuana, not necessarily THC at all, but CBD, which has now been descheduled, signed by the President of the United States, is a very powerful neuroprotectant, which is manifested in the U.S. government patent 630507 by Dr. Julius Axelrod. No slouch, literally Nobel Prize winner. And there are study upon study that show that we can protect, that the neurons themselves become neuroplastic or more resistant and robust and to impact by fivefold, according to UCLA Torrance study of 446 traffic accident victims. So there's good news out there, and what we have to do is simply face up to it and, protect the game literally and protect, the next generation of kids that love football, want to play football, but also their parents are rightly concerned they do the right thing.
Let me remind folks that are just tuning in or maybe turning on their radios a little late, Frank McKay here with great football great Nick Lowry. And he's one of the great kickers of all time, and he's got records a mile long. And
stop it.
Yes, a mile long. And
keep going.
And one of the smartest guys that has ever put on a helmet and to protect that mind of his. And I'll tell you what, we all, you know, all of us that have children, we got to make that decision. Do we want them to play? I know the president somewhere around the Super Bowl made a comment that he wouldn't want Barron, that's his youngest, playing football.
Right.
I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, he has good reason to, like any parent. He's being a responsible parent, saying, I want to protect my kid. I mean, you haven't just heard it from the president of the United States. You heard it from Steve Young, and you've heard it from a lot of different players. But I would just say this. I've been asked this many times recently. Certainly, as I remember, when I would sit on the sidelines before the Seattle Seahawks game up in the then Kingdome with Steve Largent, another wonderful leader, another guy of great character, and you watch these kids playing. Yeah, he was congressman for three terms and Hall of Famer, one of the great receivers of all time. And we'd watch these little kids with these huge helmets and these tiny bodies. It was hilarious to watch. But the ratio of not only the weight of the head to the rest of the body, but also the muscles and the skeletal structure that supports that, not to mention the development of the brain itself. We know, for instance, that the frontal lobe itself doesn't fully develop till 24, 25 in men and 20, 21 in women. I think it starts at about 12 in women. They're always a lot more mature than we are. But, you know, we have to do what we can to delay that. And so I would suggest to the president, to others, you know, there are lots of leagues now that have flag football. Drew Brees played flag football till high school. In fact, I'm not even sure he didn't start in maybe his sophomore year, and he ended up pretty darn good. So there are leagues that are teaching how to have heads up tackling, so you have good habits, just like in golf. I wish to God I'd had somebody teach me good habits of golf, so I'd have good habits when I finally started playing a lot. And the same thing is true, but of course with even more important consequences when you're tackling. So wait till 14. Dr. Ben Amalu thinks 18. I disagree with that. I think if your child really wants to play football at 14, I'd say, you know, frankly, sophomore, junior year, you know, you can be incredibly ready at that point. And then you've done your due diligence. Your child is ready. Your child has learned every other skill in the sport, has learned to be a teammate, learned to come back from adversity and defeat, learned to work with others, learned to concentrate. You know, if there's one thing that football teaches, and this is one of the, I think, most underestimated qualities of the New England Patriots, hate them as many people do, they win. They win because their players know how to focus and concentrate and think creatively and practically in the moment of the game. They don't just do the memorize, you know, the plays, memorize the playbook. And you can't do that, of course, if your brain is not healthy and fully developed. And that's what we want all our kids to do, to make good decisions, not just general decisions, but also in the moment, impulsive decisions are interrupted by a higher thinking. And that's what happens when your kid's brain develops properly.
Yeah. Well, listen, well said. And honestly, this is a real serious issue. So many of the kids nowadays are being hurt. Let me ask you, and again, you got to pardon my ignorance on this, but the quality of the helmets compared to what they were when you first started playing, and even when you finished playing, is there any more protection that we have with these helmets, or is that just wishful thinking?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Frankie, you asked that question, because in the movie Concussion, and I had a pre-premiere of that movie with hockey players and football players and top doctors like David Adelson and Cindy Pardino and from Palm Springs, you know, talking about this. But the truth is, helmets can only do so much. They certainly are a heck of a lot better than they used to be. And it's not just the helmet. It's also how often they're inspected. When your helmet is used in the summertime and it's 100 degrees or 110, and then in wintertime it goes down to sub-zero, you know, that plastic or whatever it's made of is less resistant or resilient. But the helmets do help. But I would, and I've been saying this since I was on Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports, I've been saying this now for on MSNBC, and I know I'm quoting all sorts of other sure. venues, but Dr. Ben Amalu did not he did not disagree with me that it is possible now to develop and focus on what I call the intercellular helmet. That UCLA Torrance study said that anybody with even a small amount of CBD in their system was five times less likely to die of a traumatic brain injury. So when we call and we talk about this U.S. government patent 6630507 or 507, as many call it, we're talking about the neurons of the brain being five times more neuroplastic. And the name of the actual patent is cannabinoids as neuroplasticity and neurotoxicity. So one of the things that we antioxidants, one of the things we're trying to do is convince people that as great as the helmets are, the intercellular helmet is much more important. And we can protect the brain and create this daily vitamin from KLS 13019, which is one of the patented molecules we developed at Canna Life Sciences, now called Canna Life, and Temple University, featured on Dateline NBC. Those are the things that are going to turn around, I think, the future of football by simply making it a much more valid and safe choice, because kids are protecting their brains from the inside out. That's where we'll have, I think, tremendous results. And then you have things like the most valuable, the mutual MVP, it's called, mobile virtual player, this tackling dummy that has ended teammate-on-teammate tackling for some schools and for the Ivy League, which reduces concussions as well. But the most important thing to me is the intercellular helmet, KLS 13019. We've been developing now. It's 50 times more powerful CBD. It's 400 times safer. It's 10 times more bioavailable, which, Frank, means really importantly, you can take a vitamin, any kind of vitamin, and if it's not bioavailable, you often diminish its effect. But if it's bioavailable, then you need less to have more. And that's what we're developing, and that's why a pharmaceutical, we're the only company that has a pharmaceutical research for this, for CTE and also for opioid addiction. That's incredibly important. If you look at Mike Webster's story and others, it was a very sad, torturous journey, not only with neurodegenerative conditions like dementia and like Alzheimer's, but also trying to wean himself and not succeeding from opioids that addict the brain to addictive behaviors. That is uncontestable at this point. 70,000 people have died each of the last 2 years, Let's do the arithmetic on that. That means four to five times as many people that died in the entire Vietnam War have died in the last 2 years.
Wow.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
In the United States, and 500,000 in the last 10 years. So we can do things that will protect the brain, make it calmer, but at the same time function much more effectively.
Let me remind everyone, Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Nick Lowry, football great, one of the great kickers of all time, one of the smartest guys to ever step on an NFL field, and he's an Ivy Leaguer. And you know, again, he's the type of guy you want out there talking about this and researching very, very important issues.
Well, thank you.
Coming out here, and I guess just spending a little bit of time with you, you can tell why. If you don't mind, let's do a little bit of your history, and if you can, start from the beginning. Where were you born? Where were you raised?
I'm very spoiled. My father was in the first group of Fulbright scholars, and he met my mother, who was in the first full class of women at Oxford, Hazel Bray, who was running the first Fulbright Scholars Program. And actually, speaking of New York, he was in that group with a guy named Daniel Patrick Moynihan in London. My parents were married there. I was born in Germany. My dad, having been a reconnaissance pilot for General Patton, the Third Army, in Germany for 32 missions the last few months of the war, crucial months of the war, in a tiny little Piper Cub, he saw the importance of intelligence joined the CIA. So I spent time in Europe for 6 years, in England and Germany, and then also where the CIA is located now in McLean, Virginia. Grew up there. And, you know, we are absolutely products of who we surround ourselves with. Anybody that doesn't see that is missing out an opportunity to change the quality of their lives. And here I had next door to me Byron Whizzer White, Supreme Court Justice for 31 years. He'd just been approved in 1962 by the Senate and had been number two behind Bobby Kennedy at Justice. And this man had led the National Football League in rushing for the Pittsburgh Steelers and then for the Detroit Lions in his 3 years in the league, led the league in rushing the same year, Frank, he finished number one at Yale Law School. And I bring him up because his name is on the foremost award given by NFL players, by the Players Association. And, you know, when you have a role model like that, that that lives their lives so profoundly that they really don't have to talk about it. They talk by how they choose to spend their time. It affects you greatly. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have parents whose lives were about service as well. Byron White couldn't really talk about his job much, right? He didn't want to compromise his independent views. And so we'd often talk about history, and he loved Abraham Lincoln and some of the great presidents. And we'd all shoot baskets between our houses. We had basketball hoops. And, you know, that's what I was brought up with, was the idea of service. My dad, as a CIA man, could not talk about his career with the CIA. So why did he do that? He sacrificed for the betterment of the country. One of the primal things any father or mother could do, which is talk about their careers and the values and the disciplines and the lessons that they've learned from their careers. But I know that growing up in that environment helped me realize how great it is to be able to serve your country. And I think of here I am in Houston today. I think about the John F. Kennedy campaign back in Houston many years ago, and you know what that man did to help us think about asking not what our country can do for us, but what we can do for our country. So, you know, this is our country. This is the best sport in this country. And let's ask ourselves what we can do to preserve it, because it certainly has been the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah, I get it now. I get why. I always thought you were a D.C. kid. And, you know, I get why I thought that, you know, that you were, you know, in and around that area because your dad was working there. And I just, you know, half recall all of that. But it all makes sense to me now. And I see, you know, where you get the brains from. But I also understand why you got drawn to football. You're not exactly Garrow Yeprimi, and you're not 5'7". You're a big guy, and if I remember, you were the size of what the safeties would be now. Are you 6'3", 6'4"?
I'm 6'4", 220. I would never presume to be able to tackle like Ronnie Lott, who was on our Jets team back then with Pete Carroll.
Right.
But thank you. But I did help you when you're running down the field on kickoffs and somebody was trying to nail you.
Yeah, but still, I could see early on being drawn to sports. I mean, because of your size, the coaches immediately, I would think, you know, had designs on you for all the sports. But is that accurate to assume that?
Well, I loved playing soccer. I played soccer in London at St. Paul's School in Kensington the year that England won the World Cup in 1966. In fact, Gordon Banks, the great goalie for the U.S. team that won the World Cup that year, the only time he won the World Cup, you know, that was my life. And then we played rugby 1 month a year, and I would be kicking the rugby ball, and the people that were coaching were like, you should be playing on the team 2-3 years older than you. That was back when I was in fourth and fifth grade. And so I didn't really kick till eighth grade. And, you know, I loved football. I loved soccer. I loved basketball. I was, you know, 6'4" in 10th grade, but all those things. Another good thing to mention is the more you play multiple sports in high school, and it's really kind of a sad thing to see this sort of professionalization beginning in high school, where coaches sort of bully their players into only playing one sport. When John McEnroe played soccer and tennis, his tennis was so much better because he knew how to use his legs and his lower center of gravity. You know, so those different sports, I think, really helped me. I was a baseball pitcher at Dartmouth College as well. In fact, Russell Wilson's father was my teammate on the baseball and football team at Dartmouth. And those things really helped, because in the end, as a kicker, like the pitcher I was, you're on an island and you have to manage your emotions, manage your focus, and stay with your equanimity, if you will, despite whatever happens. So, you know, just like the kicker that has to keep himself focused while they're calling a timeout and he's got the game-winning field goal staring at him and 80,000 people. You know, staring at him and some very large people 20 feet away whispering sweet nothings about him and his mother.
Well, let me remind folks, you're hearing the voice of Nick Lowry, Frank McKay here. Nick, do we have you for another quick segment, or are you on the run?
Absolutely. Would love to.
Well, listen, do you have a website or a social media site where people can follow along? Folks that aren't driving, if you're sitting in front of your computer, please don't do it if you're driving. But do you have a website or a social media site where people can follow?
Instagram is at Lowry Nick, but canalife.com, K-A-N-N-A-L-I-F-E, canalife.com. I would also encourage people to Google Canalife and Dateline. It's a wonderful piece with Dean Petkanis and Doug Brenneman, who are the geniuses behind this research at Temple that has developed KLS-13019 and another molecule, KLS-13022, and others that are going to revolutionize the protection, the neural protection, the neural, robustness that we all need in life, because life itself is a contact sport.
Well, Nick Lowry, once again, is our very special guest. Check out his website. One of the smartest guys who's ever stepped on a field of any kind, but certainly the NFL. And he is he's talking about some serious issues, and who better to speak about that. And also the son of a CIA agent. We appreciate his dad's service, that's for sure, and his whole family's service. We all know that the family gets involved they're asked to sacrifice as well. Frank McKay here. When we come back, more with Nick Lowry.